Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing on Hanson Street in Fitzrovia, W1. 4 streets southwest of the Charlotte Street robbery. 1 street east of the murder of the lady. 3 streets east of the rape by the cowardly billionaire's son. And 2 streets south of the gangster who lost it all. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Hanson Street is quite possibly the dullest street in London. It's so dull, the dogs bark out of boredom. Each flat has its own yawn. If a gallery opened, it would be shut down for being too rowdy. And the only sound you'll hear is as a moped roars by to deliver an overpriced, substandard pizza from the place at the end of the road to brainless deadbeats who refuse to wash up, will only eat the blandest of double-syllable foods, and then order, "Alexa, hire a flunky to chew my food and then wipe my bum." Halfway down is 21 Hanson Street, a red brick, 5-story mansion block, from which a single sound is rarely uttered, and where families, couples and singletons go about their lives within a few feet of each other, but rarely mix or mingle, except for a perfunctory hello.
Hello!
And then an all too hasty goodbye.
Goodbye!
And yet on Monday the 18th of August 1952, at roughly 2 p.m, a scream from flat 8 on the third floor of 21 Hanson Street carried so far that many of the neighbours came flocking to see what the commotion was all about. Inside, a woman was dead. But how did she die? And who knew what? My name is Michael. I'm your tour guide. And this is Murder Mile. Episode 234. Deadly Soap. When there's no separation between religion and the law. Too often the laws of our land are shaped by moralising policymakers who have very little connection with the side of society that their law affects. And with almost no recourse, too often it's the innocent who are driven to take drastic steps. Georgia Antoniou was born Georgia Andreou on the Mediterranean island of Cyprus on an unspecified date in 1929 as one of 2 daughters and a son to Anastasia. Being a traditional Greek Cypriot who was raised as a Greek Orthodox Christian, when they came to Britain 5 years before, they brought with them their language, their culture, and their beliefs, which were hard to replicate in post-war Britain. Something that rankled Georgia's values was that she wasn't married in a Greek Orthodox church, but in a local registry office. It was never explained why, as her faith had never wavered as far as we know. But it doesn't make sense, as the first Greek Orthodox church in London was built in nearby Soho in the 1700s. For centuries, London had had a thriving Greek Cypriot community. And as a crown colony from 1925, during World War II, this city had become the seat of the Greek government in exile. On the 7th of June 1952, 23-year-old Georgia visited the surgery of Dr. Michael Leosides in Kentish Town, as her mother Anastasia sat in the waiting room. Having examined her, although an initial test proved inconclusive, on the 10th of July, just 1 month later, Georgia got the news that she was pregnant. Like her mother, she would have made a great parent. And being fit, strong, and healthy, there was no physical reason not to have a child. But as recent immigrants, struggling to stay afloat in a foreign land, and with her relationship with her loving husband a little strained, this wasn't the right time for her. It was the wrong decision for her to have a child at that very moment. It was unfair on the baby to be born in a family which wasn't ready to accept it. A baby should be welcomed into a world out of love, not reluctance, having been forced to exist owing to the laws written by men and demanded by great swathes of society who will never give birth. And as much as she would love her child dearly, it wasn't right to burden it with a life of want when she could have waited until her dire circumstances had improved. Some might say, well, if she didn't want a baby, then she shouldn't have had sex. But everything was against her. The pill didn't exist. Condoms were outlawed by her religion. And abstinence was an option. But how often is consensual sex ever consensual? Inside her body, the clock was ticking. In 6 months' time, a baby would be born whether she liked it or not. And as much as her religion forbade it, society scoffed, and the moralizing lawmakers denied her any right to decide what to do with her own body. She had an impossible decision to make. To appease the people by what suited their moral values, or to break the law and risk everything she had worked hard for, such as her freedom, her citizenship, her home, her family, her health, and of course, her life. Until the Abortion Act of 1967, a series of unfair, moralistic laws had led to untold scores of good, decent women seeking out the only alternatives they had to an unwanted pregnancy. Even in 1952, 5 years into the formation of the National Health Service, a tax-paying woman couldn't have what was in effect an unwanted growth removed from her insides at a publicly funded hospital. So many sought out unqualified backstreet abortionists, unreliable homemade remedies, or drank a cocktail of unregulated poisons, many of which caused hair loss, fever, vomiting, bleeding, loss of kidney function, blindness, paralysis, and even death. In 1923, 15% of all maternal deaths were due to illegal abortions, and the rate of unwanted pregnancies was climbing. One woman said, My aunt died by self-aborting. She had three children and couldn't feed a fourth. So she used a knitting needle and died of septicemia, leaving all of her children motherless. In 1938, Dr. Alex Bourne was acquitted of performing an abortion on a 14-year-old girl who had been gang-raped and was suicidal, which opened the doors to a legally acquired abortion, but only if the mother's life was in danger and she had a psychiatrist's approval. And although in the 1960s, availability of the contraceptive pill changed many women's lives, far too many were still being killed by illegal abortions. In 1967, the Abortion Act became law, which legalized abortions for pregnancies up to 23 weeks and 6 days. It's a law which still exists today. But for Georgia, living in 1952, she didn't have that option. It's understandable that Anastasia, George's mother, would deny all knowledge of the abortion, as under the Offences Against the Person Act of 1861 and the Infant Life Preservation Act of 1929, even the act of aiding an illegal abortion risked her being imprisoned. So what she knew or did is uncertain. Back in June 1952, Anastasia said of the time, "Many times we spoke about the pregnancy. She said she did not want to have a child as she was not married in a Greek church. I used to tell her that many Cypriot ladies were not married in the church, but they did have children because the registry marriage is valid. But as a Greek Cypriot with very traditional values, Georgia was not convinced." A few days later, my daughter said to me, "I heard of a certain woman, and I want you to come with me so that we can see this woman." Taking the short walk along Charing Cross Road, from her mother's house in Googe Place to a poorly lit side street just off Shaftesbury Avenue, Georgia and Anastasia arrived at 57 New Compton Street. Anastasia would state, "We went to the house of this woman, and I learned that her name was Harita." Which wasn't entirely true, as her name was Haritini Matthew, a 54-year-old widow with two children, who made a living as a seamstress, but as a former nurse, helped those in need in the Greek community. Haritini would contradict this, stating, "I have known Anastasia for 3 or 4 years. I met her on the corner of New Compton Street, and we talked together because we are both from Cyprus. She has been to my house many times, and I have been to her address in Googe Place about 3 months ago." As the possible abortionist, it's also understandable why she would lie. But this is not to imply a kind of sinister conspiracy. Far from it. As these were just two working-class immigrant women who spoke very little English and had even less status, engaging in an illegal act. But not for profit, but because it was right. Anastasia said, "My daughter and the woman were speaking together in English, which I do not understand." Whereas Haritini said, "Mrs. Andreou and the other lady, who she said was her daughter, went into my flat and stayed for about half an hour. Mrs. Andreou talked about her feet and her bad legs, but apparently nothing else was said." In their statements, neither of them say anything about an abortion. And for good reason. Monday the 18th of August 1952, was the day that, possibly by chance, Haratini Matthew popped by the flat of Georgia Antonio for lunch. And Georgia's mother Anastasia dropped in to do some cleaning. The flat was small, thin and practical, with a sitting room overlooking the street, a bed opposite the front door, a dining room at the back, and in the middle, a kitchen-cum-bathroom with a gas hob for cooking and a bath for bathing. As before central heating, that was how you heated the bathwater. Anastasia said, "I went upstairs, opened the door, and I saw my daughter in the bedroom. When I saw her, I was surprised, and I said, 'Why did you not go to work?' She told me she was unwell. Then in the bedroom, I saw the woman. But I had no right to say anything, as it was not my room." It was while she was in the kitchen that Anastasia said that she noticed a bowl on the gas. "I don't know what was in it. The water was coloured. And feeling afraid, I wanted to leave the house, not to see or know anything. My daughter said to me, 'Go and sit in the sitting room. It's nothing to do with you.'" It was then that both women's stories converged. As apparently Georgia said, "I've got a headache, Mummy." Her mother told her to lay down. And seconds later, both women stated, "We heard a noise like something falling." In the bedroom, Haratini said, "Georgia was lying on the floor. The mother and I lifted her onto the bed. I then put water on her forehead to bring her round, as I have nursing experience, having been trained as a registered midwife in Cyprus." Which was either a very brave or a very stupid thing to admit to the police, given the situation that had already unfolded. By their own accounts, they had no idea why she was ill. She said she had a pain in her stomach. And although Georgia was able to open her eyes, she could not speak and was barely conscious and hardly breathing. Desperate to revive her from a mysterious collapse, they did whatever they could. Haratini massaged her heart and her unstockinged legs with eau de cologne and raised her legs over her head. As in the 1950s, these were believed to be effective forms of artificial respiration. And according to Anastasia, "I smacked her on the face, I bit her thumb, and I did what I could to bring her round. But I could not do so." Telephoning for George's doctor and stating, "Come at once. Bring an injection to save my daughter. She has fainted." Dr. Leocedes arrived just after 2 p.m. But by then, Georgia Antonio was already dead. A single scream echoed the length of Hanson Street that day. Only it wasn't the death throes of Georgia, but the grief of her mother, Anastasia. Karen Russell in flat 8, two floors below, ran up the stairwell to see Anastasia collapsed on the step, hysterically wailing like her soul was full of nothing but tears. As described as demented, she ran from room to room, pulling at her hair and hitting herself, unable to comprehend the sheer horror. joined by two neighbours. As they stood in the doorway, Caroline Ferris and Margaret Polly both saw George's lifeless body, semi-clad and sprawled across the bed. And it was clear that she was dead. As her open mouth uttered nothing, not even a breath, a glistening tear on her lid was the only movement in her staring eyes. And her sweat-soaked face was etched in terror, as if she'd seen the devil himself. Unable to get any sense out of Anastasia, when asked, "What happened?" "Haratini," said, "I don't know. She fell down here." And when asked, "Why haven't you sent for a doctor?" Even though Anastasia had, she lied, "I don't know her doctor." As Haratini then silently slipped out of the flat, unseen by anyone. Headed up by Detective Inspector Percy Woolway, this was a scene he had seen far too frequently in the last few decades, as many good women were driven to do something drastic out of sheer desperation. The evidence was self-explanatory, as upon entry, the acrid stench of disinfectant stung the air, as well as the sheets, the pillow, and the groin of the woman herself. As with her stockings, slippers, and knickers on the floor, her bare pale legs were stained with a steady stream of congealed blood. In the bathroom lay the recently pared shavings of a block of Lifebuoy soap. On the stove, a soiled pan sat empty, as around it fizzed the white scum of a foamy lather. And between her legs lay an assortment of items which hadn't arrived by accident. Several rolls of cotton wool, an enema syringe, and the remainder of a glass containing 2 ounces of stiff soapy jelly, made up of 1/3 of carbolic soap. None of these items belonged in the flat. And when quizzed, neither woman said that they recognized them. Having already questioned Anastasia, Haratini Matthew was arrested 1 week later. And at her flat at 54 New Compton Street, they found a similar syringe, an identical brand of soap, and 11 ampules of an undisclosed drug, which she later admitted was to aid only herself, owing to a bout of constipation. On the 3rd of September, Anastasia Andreou and Haratini Matthew were both charged with the manslaughter of Georgia Antonio and conspiring to procure an abortion. But the evidence of what happened to Georgia was irrefutable. Her autopsy conducted by Dr. Donald Tear at St. Pancras Mortuary told a tragically familiar story. Listed as young, healthy, and free from any disease, a few hours, or maybe a day before her death, Georgia had lain on her bed, praying that her unwanted and unspoken pregnancy would vanish without a trace. With her undergarments removed for a procedure she could never have done alone, the pared shavings of carbolic soap, of a type freely available to most households, was dissolved in a warm pan of water until it reached a frothy, lukewarm lather. Partially made of carbolic acid, it acted as an antiseptic for cleaning wounds. Unless, of course, it was administered internally in a purer form. as a common type of abortion. The dissolved carbolic soap was inserted directly into the uterus, using a rubberized enema syringe containing 30% carbolic acid. As the frothy lava engulfed the womb, being an irritant, the acid would cause the lining to enlarge, to inflame, and to bleed until the embryonic sac had burst. And a few days later, the deceased fetus would be expelled. Or at least, that was the idea. A bruise on the back of the uterus's neck was consistent with an enema syringe. And although a white fizz had enveloped the recently deceased two-month-old fetus, the pathologist formed the opinion that the amount of pressure needed to distend the uterus by 4.5 inches could not have been caused by the girl herself. The baby was dead, having drowned in acid. But with the fetus still undetached, force had been used, her placenta had ruptured, and the lethal froth had entered her bloodstream. Carbolic soap was a cheap and readily available form of abortion to the average woman in need. Its effects were quick, effective, and devastating to the fetus, but all too often, lethal to the mother. It only took a small tear in the delicate lining of the placenta for a few air bubbles to leak inside of her. Once within, even a microscopic bubble of carbolic acid, or even just clean pure air, could circulate her entire body in just 3 minutes, resulting in an embolism in her veins, arteries, heart, lungs, and brain. Suffering confusion, paranoia, anxiety, and even audible and visual hallucinations, her prolonged death, which the pathologist said took as much as 10 minutes, would have resulted in arrhythmia, heart failure, lung collapse, and a stroke. As lying helpless, her last gasps of breath frothed with blood. With no way to revive her, all Anastasia could do was to watch the daughter she had tried to save die. And although just 15 years later, an abortion had become a legal day procedure in the local hospital, owing to unjust laws by the moral few, Georgia was killed because she didn't have a choice. Tried at the Old Bailey on the 28th of October 1952, dressed in black and weeping uncontrollably, Anastasia Andreu stood in the dock alongside Haratini Matthew, pleading not guilty to the charge of feloniously killing Georgia Antonio and unlawfully conspiring to procure an abortion. With such a public outcry of sympathy over this case, the prosecution provided no evidence, and both women were dismissed. It's a situation that neither woman should have found herself in, to be forced to do something illegal and harmful to herself, over a choice which was made by a stranger whose own belief had shaped the law. We all have a right to speak. We all have a right to think. And we all have a right to believe. But the law should be there so we all have the right to choose what is best for us and not what is best for someone we don't know, whose belief in life may be contradictory to our own. and if the law results in thousands of innocents dying every year, you have to question whether it's right that a belief takes precedence over the lives of others. Since the implementation of the 1967 Abortion Act, around 10 million abortions have occurred legally and safely in the UK. 214,000 happen every year in England and Wales. And with a mortality rate of just 0.6 deaths per 100,000, it's a comparatively safe medical procedure, which is only getting safer. The International Classification of Diseases stated that the most common reason for 98% of abortions was the risk to a woman's mental health. Thankfully, in the UK, women have a choice. But back in 1952, and even today in some supposedly civilized countries, women like Georgia have no choice at all. So ask yourself this: what do you want? A law which goes against your supposedly moral beliefs? Or once again, thousands of desperate women driven to their deaths and being killed by deadly soap?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, there you go, folks. It was a nice, happy one, wasn't it? I'm sure you're going to be having your cup of tea now or your breakfast or whatever and thinking, thanks, Mike, thanks for that. But you know what? It's an important one. That's what I try and do. I'm just going to tell you your little health. That's what I try and do with Murder Marley. It's not all... I don't like these podcasts where it's all about, oh, killer, the killer does some bad killing. Oh, he stabs people and he cuts heads off. I think that's just shite. I think it's better. I think it's... For me, I think it's important that we learn from the past. We learn from history. We learn from what's going on. And the past... I know there's a lot of people out there who want to forget the past, and there's a lot of people who kind of want to cancel the past as well. Go, oh, well, that's disgraceful, let's cancel it. I think the whole purpose of the past is that we learn from the past so we don't make the same mistakes in the future and the present, and that's what this is about. And, do you know, if we end up sliding backwards and saying, hey, women, look, you're not going to have rights anymore. If we start taking away rights from decent human beings who are just trying to live their lives, do you know, it's just wrong that that's kind of happening. So we need to be pushing forward. We need to be a more tolerant society. Do you know, there's going to be things that you do and things that your neighbour does that all conflict. You just got to accept that. We've just got to accept that we're different. It's what makes us more exciting, it's what makes us unique. If we all became drones, what's the point in life? What's the point in living if we all believe the same shit, if we all do the same thing? It's just boring. It's like We're all different. Let's just accept that. Let's try and create laws that that suit, you know, people living a better life rather than just, oh, this is my belief and I'm going to stick to that and I'm not going to, oh, how dare you? Oh, this is my belief and therefore you should live your life according to my belief, even though your life is going to be a lot worse off because of my beliefs. It's just wrong, isn't it? It's just entirely wrong. We need a fairer system of living. And do you know what? If there's laws out there that I don't particularly agree with, do you know what? I'm grown up enough to be able to say, I don't agree with those laws, but you know what? It doesn't really affect me. And I think that's the key thing is, it doesn't really, if it doesn't really affect you, just shut up. Just shut up. It's like, anyway, I'm sure right now someone who's never written a review of Murder Mile before is currently writing an angry review going, I've never written a review before, but now I feel obliged to write a negative review. One star. Here it comes. I would give naught stars, but iTunes won't let me. Still my favourite. I've seen it on so many people's reviews on their podcasts anyway. So there we go. That's that episode done. I thought it was an important one. We've done a couple of abortion ones before, but when I kind of found this one, even though we had covered abortion cases before, I felt it was kind of really important to kind of dive into abortion by carbolic soap. Do you know, I think a lot of us kind of assume that it's of, you know, you just take some pills. You go, oh, I'll just take some pills. Oh, a fetus pops out. But, you know, this is one of the methods that was used. It's not one of the most barbaric methods, but it is a barbaric method. And but it was one of the most popular ones. It was kind of cheap. You could do it at home. You used the equipment that you had, but it had high risks. It's a very high risk option. I'm trying to think of the word that I don't even think the word option is right. Or choice, that's not even the right word for it, is it? It's just, you know, women forced into a difficult situation. They had to use what they could do at the moment. They couldn't go to the police. They couldn't go to hospital. They were stuck and they were fucked. And then they ended up having to risk their lives. And as put in there as well, do you know, contraception wasn't there. What are you meant to do? And what are you meant to do if you're married and your husband's like, oh, I demand to have some sex. What do you do? Say no? We're still in an era back then. Don't forget, it was only about 20 years ago, if my memory serves me right, that it was still legal in the UK to rape your wife. It was still legal. What the fuck? So what? If you're saying, if at this point you're listening to this and going, well, she shouldn't have had sex. We're going back 50 years. We're going back 50 years prior to the creation of the equality law that said you can't rape your wife anymore. That's relatively new. So what is a woman meant to do in the 1950s? Do you know? Anyway, that is that. We've done that episode. Christ, that was a hard one. Oh, did I say welcome to Extra Mile? Unscripted, unedited. This is the unscripted, unedited bit. What we'll do is to do some quiz questions shortly. I'll do some extra stuff that wasn't in the episode. Don't forget, if you want to be a Patreon subscriber and you like Extra Mile, I have a kind of a good old walk with me, and then I fill you in on all the details. I fill you in on secrets that I don't tell anyone else. And also you get to explore interesting places with me, like Dogger's Lane. There we go. Dogger's Lane, where I walk down there and I talk about the show we've just been to, and then I walk past loads of cars where people are having sexy time in cars and flashing lights at each other. It's just accident. I just happened to be walking by. What else is going on? I'm recording this during a lull. We're right in the heart of Storm Ciarán at the moment, and I was recording it partly at lunchtime when I was the boatman was here, boatwoman, and they deliver my gas and my coal and my fuel, and I was stocking up on all that, and I started to record this, but Storm Ciarán kind of ran in. And I was like, oh, you bastard, I can't record this anymore because it's too noisy, the boat's rocking around and there's rain on the roof. So I went away to the coffee shop and did some work on a project I'm working on. And then I was like, oh, there's a gap in the clouds. So I found like a two-hour gap in the clouds and I'm recording this. I've just finished. That's not bad. This has taken me about an hour. I really, really thought I'd struggle with this episode, but I did all right. So there we go. Hence, I treated myself today to a nice Belgian bun. one of the nice Belgian buns from the nice shop up the road, the big fat Belgian buns that's got lemon curd on the centre. Although it's not going to be a regular thing. I'm still trying to stay slim. I'm trying to keep the fat off. But yeah, I'm just trying to be a good boy at the moment. I'm trying not to go backwards because I know I can binge. I have no self-control. I really don't. So there we go. Thank you to new Patreon subscribers. Just want to say thank you to Sandra Blaufeld and Ricky J. So thank you, Sandra, and thank you, Ricky. Thank you for becoming Patreon subscribers. It's very much appreciated. I hope you're enjoying the show. I hope you're enjoying all the goodies that you get with Patreon as well. With Patreon, don't forget, what you can do is you can, there's a button that says free trial. And if you click free trial, you can get access to everything. You get access to everything in that tier. You can go through the back catalogue. You can have a look through, see what you like. If you like what you see, you can stay after 7 days. If not, not a problem. You could just unclick and then, you know, you don't have to pay for anything. But then you get to see, oh, do I want to be a Patreon subscriber? And if you do, at the end of your trial, then I'll send you some goodies and you get a handwritten thank you from me. Not like some people do where they print it off once and they sign it. This is a handwritten one by me. Handwriting's sometimes quite shit. But you also get exclusive stuff like the Murder Mile beer mat, Murder Mile badges, Murder Mile stickers, Murder Mile fridge magnet. Depending on the tier as well, you also get the Murder Mile keyring and Murder Mile mug, which is on the higher tiers as well. And some of those mugs I'm not making anymore as well. They are kind of, when they're done, they're done. So, whew, right, let's dive into some quiz questions. And then I could have my kebabs, which I have had for almost 16 months now, almost every night. And I'm still not bored of them. I still think they're really good. And I've, in order to help my diet, I've fleshed them out with carrots. So kind of parboiled carrots, or kind of more al dente, but it's really good. It adds, if you're trying to find a way to diet, folks, what I've worked out is you can have kind of a decent meal, but what I do is I flesh everything out with either chopped up carrots or chopped up celery or bits of both, or chopped up tomato as well. What it does is, because it's low calorie, it fleshes everything out, and therefore you kind of feel full, but you're not being full of, like, I treated myself to a pasta meal the other day. It was all right. Do you know, I kind of didn't miss it. It was quite bland. I missed having crunchy textures. So yeah, I'm glad I'm doing that now. Anyway, that was some A-grade waffle for you there. That was high quality waffle that I shipped in from Belgium and covered in fucking whipped cream. That was waffle o'clock. Let's do some quiz questions. I will admit I've only done 8 because I wanted to dive into some extra stuff on this, but they are quite hard questions. So let's see how you do on these. The answers will come at the end. So, question number one. What floor was Georgia's flat on? Question number two. Georgia was one of how many children? Question number three. What was the name of the company that Georgia worked at? Question number four. In which part of London was Dr. Leocedi's surgery? Question number five. In 1923, what percentage of maternal deaths were due to illegal abortions? Question number six. What was the name of the doctor who was acquitted of giving an abortion to a 14-year-old girl who'd been gang raped? Question number seven. On what street did Haritini Matthew live? And question number eight. What was Anastasia cooking in the kitchen? There we go. Okay, let's dive into some extra. So, when the police walked in, this was the evidence they found. So, Detective Inspector Percy Woolway, there was actually a constable who came in first, and he did an initial look, and he was the one who was like, okay, I need to call the homicide department. My brain's not working at the moment. Scotland Yard. Things, dude, are... Percy Woolway, so D.I. Percy Woolway, said he went into the basin. So don't forget, the basin was in the kitchen where there was also the bath. So we're in that era where you've got a bath and you've got... same as last week. You've got the bath and you've got the kitchen stove together, because that's where you heat the water to put in the bath, so it makes sense to put them together. The toilet, just so you know, was next door in a private kind of sectioned off room. You kind of get that in a lot of places. It's kind of weird looking back, because I always remember toilets being in a different room to the washing basin, but that was kind of the old way of doing things. So in the washing basin, he found the tablet of soap. He also noticed damp stains on the bedsheets and pillows and a smell of carbolic soap. It's quite an acrid smell, so when he kind of... It's very disinfectantly. So when he walked in, he could smell instantly it was carbolic soap. He'd been to so many of these kind of crime scenes where an abortion had either taken place and the person had fled, or an abortion had taken place and someone had died. There was, as mentioned in the episode, there was a lot of deaths owing to these kind of illegal abortions, but... You know, what are these women meant to do? If you don't want to have a baby, what are you going to do? On the floor was a pair of nylon stockings, stated as if they had been pulled off the legs. We don't know who by. Don't forget, at this point, we've got Haratini and we've got Anastasia. And we will go into their statements before. Kind of in this episode, I covered a lot of this using their original statements at the start, because I wanted to get across not the fact that they're lying. They were lying, but trying to get across the fact that even though the evidence was clear-cut throughout, they're in such a difficult, precarious situation that at the start they're just saying, we don't know anything about this, we didn't see anything, but obviously all this information, all this evidence is there. So on the floor was rolls of cotton wool, two bed sheets which had areas of soap staining, a pillow which also had areas of soap staining, a lid to one of the bottles on which were two cotton wool ball swabs soaked in carbolic soap. Exhibit 5 was the enamel basin itself. Exhibit 6, a substance in the glass, a soap solution with 2 ounces of stiff soapy jelly, which contained about 30% of dry household carbolic soap. And Exhibit 7, a tablet of Lifebuoy carbolic soap, which had been paired with a knife. They said part of the pairing was not fresh, so it indicated that there had been a length of time between the pairing and its use. So they knew that because it wasn't wet. But also, this does kind of suggest that this piece of soap had probably been used multiple times before. When George Antonio, who was George's husband, came back to the flat, he said that soap was not one that they'd ever used before. He said, I've never seen it in my flat. We always use a white soap. Carbolic is kind of a weird, horrible grey colour. Autopsy was held at 3:45 p.m. That same day by Dr. Donald Tier. He said Georgia had died as a result of an air embolism within 10 minutes of injection of a frothy solution of household carbolic soap. There's a lot in here that's really difficult for me to... I really do struggle with reading and... dyslexia and having a bit of a stutter, so sometimes it's got better through years of doing podcasting. It really has got a hell of a lot better, but with things like this, I still struggle a lot. So the autopsy, there were small incised wounds at the base of each thumbnail. So as mentioned in the episode, Anastasia, George's mother, has said that she dug her fingernails into the corners of her thumbnails in order to try and revive her. So that was entirely true. In and around the bed, they said it was quite wet as well with water. So that was the same that Haratini, as we'll see later on, she'd thrown water at Georgia to try and wake her up. I mentioned in the episode about the different ways that they tried to wake her up from her kind of her collapse. And unfortunately, you know, we all know how to do the kind of the heart compressions, the, you know, the staying alive. We've all been taught how to do that. And even if we're not taught, we all know roughly what we've got to do. But back in that era, the kind of idea of kind of artificial respiration was literally getting the legs. The person lies on their back. You get their legs and you raise their knees multiple times to their chest. And that was believed to be artificial respiration. Also using eau de cologne, kind of a strong aftershave / perfume under their nose to wake them up. So these are all things that were tried, but it was absolutely futile. Inside the uterus was enlarged and contained a fetus of approximately 2 months gestation, being 4 inches in diameter, and the uterus contained a large quantity of froth and smelled of carbolic soap. Also in there were pieces of coagulated white material, which bore the consistency of soft soap. The walls of the uterus also contained air bubbles, so that's, as mentioned in the episode, air bubbles had gone in through that wound, into the bloodstream, into the veins, into the heart, the vessels supplying the heart, and the vessels of the brain as well. So she died within 10 minutes. It would have been a horrible death as well. It's you get a lot of auditory and visual hallucinations. There's a lot going on in your brain. You've got heart arrhythmia. As mentioned in the episode, it's absolutely horrible way to die. But also, it seems to be, according to the notes, the pathologist said, "I formed the opinion that the amount of pressure needed to distend the uterus to the extent 4.5 inches would not have been caused by the girl herself. It looks like the embryonic sac hadn't detached as it should have done, therefore they were trying to manually remove it themselves. We're not too sure why. We're not too sure how they were trying to do that. So the autopsy was pretty much consistent. The only external injuries to Georgia were the small crescent-shaped wounds to the base of each thumbnail, which her mother had done to try and raise rent. No other bruising that was going on that we could see. Let me run down to the third statement by Anastasia. She gave two statements, but then eventually on the 8th of September, she turned up at Tottenham Court Road Police Station, which was where the investigation was held, because that's in Fitzrovia. And she was like, this is her words, "I have come to this station of my own accord, now that I've come to my senses to tell the truth, the whole truth as God is the truth. My daughter told me that she had not had her period for several days, but then something happened on a few occasions." Just as a reminder, because she speaks Greek and she has almost no English, this has gone through a translator. The translator has reiterated it to a police constable. The police constable, obviously, the detective asks the questions. Therefore, this is not her saying these words and then being put in direct onto paper. It's kind of a back and forth, so it's not really her words. She said, "A few days later, my daughter and I went to see Dr. Leocides at his home. The doctor examined my daughter and told me, 'I cannot tell you now, but come and see me after a few days.' A few days later, we went to see the doctor, and this time he said, 'I think you are pregnant.' When we left the doctor's house, I said to my daughter, 'If you are pregnant, you have a husband and are a married woman, so you do have children.' With my daughter, many times we spoke about the matter of pregnancy, and she said she did not want to have a child, as she was not married in the church, in brackets, the Greek church. And I used to tell her that many Cypriot ladies were not married in the church, but they did have children because a registry marriage is valid. A few days later, my daughter said to me, 'I know of a certain woman, I have heard of a certain woman, and I want you to come with me so we can see this woman. Perhaps she knows something to tell me about this matter.' I supposed, I don't know, that my daughter had heard something about this woman. It did not cross my mind. I went to the house of this woman." Obviously, this woman is Haritini. And when we got there, I learned that her name was Harita. It wasn't. My daughter and Mrs. Harita. I've changed it throughout the episode because I didn't want you going Haritini and then, "Oh, who is Harita?" I've called her the woman a lot because it just makes more sense. "My daughter and Mrs. Harita were speaking together in English, which I do not understand." It's also unclear how much English Georgia knew as well. "We did not stay there a long time, approximately 5 or 10 minutes. Before we left, I heard Mrs. Harita say to my daughter, 'It is nothing, don't be afraid.' We left the house of Miss Harita and went to the house of my daughter. It was in the afternoon and I stayed with my daughter up to 9 or 10 o'clock as usual and then went to my room at Googe Place. The Sunday before the accident, we, myself, my daughter and her husband George were at the Brotherhood and then left and said goodnight to me and I stayed there." So she stayed at her daughter's place the night before. It was kind of we don't really know when the initial part of the abortion happened, because with the enema syringe, that's kind of administered, and normally with all of the kind of carbolic soap going inside of a uterus, normally that takes about a day for it to kind of, I can't think what the word is, I would say infect and then kind of cause inflammation of the kind of the walls and the embryonic sac, and also for the baby to die. So it takes normally a day. So we don't know quite when it happened, whether it happened like within an hour, whether at the 1 o'clock when they say that they turned up at the flat, whether that's when they administered it, a cut happened and then everything went wrong. That could have happened because the baby was dead, but by that point the mother had died by the time the autopsy had happened, obviously. But there was still the white froth from the carbolic soap inside of her, which was still slightly bubbling. So we don't quite know when that had happened. It could be likely that it happened on that same day. It could be likely that it was done the day before. We don't know. We really don't know. Day of the abortion. I thought it was right to call there and to make a bed for her as usual, as I knew that she was starting work after the holiday. She'd actually taken 2 weeks off work around this time. So it looks like this was around the time that they were planning to kind of do the abortion. I went upstairs, opened the door with the key and saw my daughter in the bedroom. When I saw her, I was surprised, in brackets, terrified. And I said to me, that doesn't quite work. And I said to me, why? Oh, and I said to her, that probably is meant to say, why did you not go to work? She told me she did not because she was indisposed. I then entered the bedroom and saw Mrs. Harita in my daughter's house, but had no right to say anything. It was not my room. Then my daughter said to me, go to the kitchen and get dinner ready. And I went to the kitchen. I was in the kitchen for a while, I do not remember how long, and left them alone in the bedroom. So you can see how kind of she's trying to distance herself from everything. She's being quite vague. She's like, you know, it's not my place. I just turned up to do some cooking. This woman's there. I don't know who she is, even though she's known her for 4 years. But you can see why she's trying to distance herself from everything. And also, she never mentions anything to do with the cotton wool buds, the soap, the enema, anything. I called out and asked my daughter if she wanted me to set the table, and she said, no, I have no appetite now. Later, I went and sat in the dining room. There, I heard some noises coming from the kitchen and went back into the kitchen. When I entered the kitchen, I saw the two, that's Harita and her daughter, and they had a bowl on the gas. I don't know what was in it. I only saw that the water in the bowl was coloured. So this would have been the carbolic acid being heated up and dissolved. I wanted to leave the house, not to see or know anything. See, that is a statement in its own right, isn't it? Of why would you say that in a statement? If this is nothing, why would you say that? But obviously, it's clear that she knows that something is going on there. So she's trying to say something is going on, but I don't like it. But I didn't say anything about it. This is the problem, is that if you think about it, she's in quite... We've already seen her, how she is immediately afterwards. You know, her daughter's just died. She was interviewed the day that her daughter died, and then a week after that. But obviously she's frantic, she's desperate, she's in floods of tears, especially while she's doing this statement as well. So she's not thinking clearly. And let's not forget as well, she's doing this in her language, which is being translated to someone else and then translated into English and then put onto paper. So this is all an absolute mess. But that's what happens a lot with statements. My daughter said to me, go and sit in the sitting room. It's nothing to do with you. I said to her, my daughter, do what you know. You're not a child. You are 24 years old. She was 23. I then went back and sat down in the dining room. I wanted to go back into the kitchen. I felt an urge to go back into the kitchen and to get some water and put it on my face. When I went to the kitchen, I did not find them there. I went to the bathroom and saw them there. But my daughter was lying on the bed, the one next to the window, dressed and semi-conscious. There was two beds in the room. Don't forget, this is an era where, you know, husbands and wives share a room together, but they often have separate beds. Some people would say that it's a blessing. I took my daughter in my arms. She was dressed and semi-conscious. I took my daughter in her arms. In my arms, I smacked her on the face. This is to kind of revive her. Bit her thumb and did what I could to bring her to, but I could not. I was then pulling my hair because of my depression. My glasses fell off. I did not know what I was doing, and I could not see anything. I was mad and kept running from room to room. So this is what the witnesses did say that, but it's kind of interesting that she says the glasses fell off, because if you think about it, that's a good way of saying I didn't see anything. She said, I went to another room to find my handbag to get the notebook in which I had Dr. Leocedi's phone number. I finally found the notebook and the doctor's number and rung him up, but I could not speak to him. I only managed to say, Leocedi's, run at once to my daughter, Georgia. I told him my name and left the number. I was like a mad person. I did not know what to do. I did not even go back to my daughter. I ran downstairs to see if I could find someone to telephone the hospital. I went to a shop near the milkman's and found an English boy. I wanted him to telephone the hospital, but I could not tell him in English. I only managed to say the word daughter and showed him with my hands crossed over that my daughter would die. I said, please, hospital, daughter. He gave me a pencil and paper and I wrote 21, the number of my daughter's house. I didn't put that in the episode because it's kind of hard to get that across. I think visually you could do that. Audibly, it doesn't kind of work. But it's kind of quite a frantic thing in there. One of the reasons that I didn't put it in there is because even though a lot of this is about what Anastasia knew and what Haritini knew, I also wanted to make sure that this was about Georgia, because Georgia is the victim here, not the mother and Haritini are, but kind of more Georgia, and it's really Georgia's pain that's going on. What have we got? Haritini Matthew. So she'd been in the UK since 1937. She came over here as a widow. She married her husband, Michael Matthew, in January 1938. They'd since separated and had two children, and she earns a living by sewing. She said, I have known Mrs. Andreu, which is Anastasia, for some 3 or 4 years. I met her on the corner of New... Almost gave away the quiz question then. You had a little bit of that then. And we talked together because we're both from Cyprus. She has been to my house many times. Last week she called at my house with another lady who she said was her daughter. It's interesting that in the kind of this, the original version that... Anastasia said, oh, it was my daughter and her. They knew each other and they were communicating. But here, Haritini says, no, I really don't know her at all. It's kind of her daughter. No idea. What we got? So I was just scrolling down a bit. So Haritini said, both mother and daughter asked me before I left to call on them at flat 8, 21 Hanson Street. And I've said, of course, one day. So in none of this are they admitting pregnancy or abortion or anything like that. She said that day she went shopping in Euston. She called in on them. It was all very polite. Georgia answered the door and she was dressed. All three of us sat down and talked about housework in general. Lovely. Georgia said, I've got a headache, Mummy. Her mother told her to lay down and have a rest. We heard a noise like something falling and found Georgia lying on the floor of the bedroom. Mother and I lifted her on the bed. I then put water on her forehead to bring her round, as I have nursing experience having been a trained registered midwife in Cyprus. Georgia came around. She opened her eyes but did not speak. Mother and I were crying because we were frightened. I tried to massage her heart. Her breathing was quick and I told her mother, get a doctor. Again, in none of this, even though all of the abortion equipment is on the bed, in the sink or around kind of between her legs, no one ever mentions that at all. And you can understand why. Haritini said she called out of the window to ask, people to get help, and she called up the stairs, hence also the neighbours were called as well. She said, I went into the bedroom. Georgia had her stocking and slipper on. I pulled her stockings off so I could massage her legs. I did this to see if she would open her eyes. Her mother pulled her daughter's legs up and was working them to see if she could wake her up. As mentioned in the episode, this is the kind of the you know, massaging the heart. So not the heart massage that doctors do, but kind of just massaging in and around the heart, massaging the legs to wake her up. It's a 1950s technique. It wasn't very effective, as you can appreciate. The ambulance men arrived. They put her on a stretcher. Dr. Leocedes arrived, but because he determined that Georgia was already dead, the ambulance men actually took the stretcher back into the house and put Georgia back on the bed. It's the thing, you know. They needed to wait for the police to turn up, but also for, because she's dead. You know, she's certified as dead. Therefore, what they needed was for a hearse to arrive as opposed to an ambulance. Mrs. Haritini said, I do not know what caused her to faint, as I did not do anything to make her faint. I did not know that she was expecting a baby. Neither Georgia nor the mother had told me. I saw no syringe while I was there, nor cotton wool, nor any basins. She also said, I put this in the episode, unless I've edited it out. The syringe which was found in my house by the police is mine. I use it for myself. I last used it about a week ago. Don't forget, this is a rubber syringe. It's an enema syringe. So it's not really a syringe like an injection thing. It's more kind of like a rubberized pump, and you squeeze it. Do you know like what you used to have as kids and... Do you know when you have those fake flowers on your chest and you go, oh, look, I've got a fake flower on my chest. Oh, have a sniff of it. And then you squeeze one of those rubber base of it, and it goes squirt someone in the face, and people who are clowns think it's hilarious. It's so that at the bottom is kind of more like the rubberized enema syringe. So it's more like that as opposed to a hard metal syringe for injecting things. She said, I suffer from constipation and sometimes use soapy mixtures. They also found in a flat a box of 11 ampules of an undisclosed drug and a syringe. In the police file, they listed what the name of the drug was. Unfortunately, they'd written it down really badly. So I don't know what it was. And we also don't know whether it was anything to do with the abortion itself. So we don't know. But she did admit... that she was a registered midwife, but she did say, I am not a registered nurse in this country. So there you go. That was that file, that case. Quite a tragic one. I mean, they're all tragic. I think that's why I like to focus on these little unheard cases, because real people's lives, as opposed to, oh, serial killer, oh, he did bad killing and he did cut heads off. Oh, he's horrible, isn't he? Oh. So there we go. There we go. Let me do some quiz questions. Let's see how many of them I've fricked up. I think I almost did one, but I think that was it. Okay, let's see how we did. Question number one. Ooh, a Belgian bun is calling my name. Question number one, what floor was the flat on? It was the third floor. Question number two, Georgia was one of how many children? So it's three. She had a brother. Her brother was still in Cyprus, and her sister Magda. So one of three. Question number three, what was the name of the company that Georgia worked at? It was called Linda Lee, just off Oxford Street. Question number four, in which part of London was Dr. Leocedes' surgery? It was in Kentish Town. Or if you live in Kentish Town, that's Kentish Town. Question number five, in 1923, what percentage of maternal deaths were due to illegal abortions? It was 15%. Question number six, what was the name of the doctor who was acquitted of giving an abortion to a 14-year-old girl who'd been gang-raped? That was Dr. Alex Bourne. Question number seven. On what street did Haritini Matthew live? I almost gave that one away. So hopefully you got that one. New Compton Street. which is you've got Old Compton Street heading east, and then you go over Charing Cross Road, and then that is New Compton Street. And then question number 8, what was Anastasia cooking in the kitchen? It was a roast chicken, which is kind of odd, isn't it? When you, even when you look at that piece of evidence itself, you add together, even though we've already established that she was panicking and she had to make up a lot of facts and she didn't really know what she was saying. But if you think about it, she already said that she thought her daughter wasn't there and she was going in to make her bed because she thought she was at work, even though she wasn't at work. So therefore, she doesn't think she's there. She also doesn't expect to find a guest there, and yet she's making a lunch for a selection of people. But there we go. That's what happens when you panic. You, especially when you've just seen your daughter die as well. Must have been absolutely horrific. Anyway, folks, that is that. I would say I hope you enjoyed that episode, but I don't think that's one of those episodes you could really enjoy. So next week, another episode, another one-parter. I can't remember what it's called. And then I can't even remember. This is the 1st of November today. I've no idea when this episode is going out. It's scheduled in. I've no idea what's going on at the moment. So thank you very much for supporting the show. It's very much appreciated. Have yourself a good week. Stay safe and be good people. Now, time for kebabs. Some telly. Oh, I've got some Bake Off to watch. And then I'm going to have my Belgian bun while watching Bake Off. Great times. Have yourself a good week, folks. Stay safe and be good. Lots of love. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.